The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grooms. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grooms.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
The easiest thing you'll ever do is keep your car serviced with Roda.
That's a real 5-star Google review from Diana S. And honestly, she nailed it. Roda is the DMV's most trusted auto shop. Maintenance, repairs, and detailing with free valet pickup and drop-off, no hidden fees and no pressure. Book in minutes at Roda.com. And save 20% with code POD20. It's Rota. Duh.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson coming to you live at youtube.com/Cover3 and everywhere you get your podcast on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe. Smash that like and come and join us in the chat, a.k.a. the Cover 3 tailgate, where Brad and Ryan and Jake and T-Stars and so many more are getting interactive here on a Thursday. We will take a couple questions from the tailgate. We have an actual, you know, real turntables of turn situation as we have a mailbag question that is a recommendation of a book for us. Somebody thinks they're Tom Fornelli. Before we got started, 8:57 a.m., we already got some calls of waiting for Tom's book club. So, Tom, I hope you are ready. You've got it. Okay. We will tackle it in very, very soon. Let's start with the fun one, though, from the tailgate. Jake jumped in before we got started, 8:26 a.m., and said, "What's your guys' favorite college football announcing call?" And he offered his. Mine is Joe Tess in 2015 for the blocked kick walk-off touchdown by Georgia Tech against Florida State. He also offered in there, "And Georgia Tech with an opportunity, still on his feet. One man, you can't believe what happened. What a time to be alive." He offered it. Okay, so what's your favorite college football announcing call? What was that score? 21-18? I remember it was a low-scoring game, right?
It was not the most robust offensive performance. I don't know.
You know what I like almost better? Some of the radio calls. No offense to the TV guys, but the radio call guys, they're a little bit of the homer aspect. You know, they bring a little bit more energy. TV calls, I mean, Gus Johnson last year against Homer Cooper. If you're a Gus fan or you're not, it's one of the most memorable ones of last season all time. Man, it's a good question.
What do you think?
I don't know that I have like a favorite call. I enjoy like the meme of he has trouble with the snap from Sean McDonough from that Michigan State game. But I mean, I don't know that I have a favorite call. It's a great question. I've never really put much thought into it. I do love Vern Lundquist on the kick six.
Yeah, Vern's kick six was really good.
Where it starts
no
off
flags. Kinda,
yeah,
no it starts flags.
Kind of calm, and then he's kind of realizing, oh crap, this is actually going to happen, and it's just like he kind of builds into the entire play.
Yeah, that's what I would say. There's it in my head, and I've said this before. I'm not saying it is my favorite. I'm not saying it's best. I'm just saying that from 2 years ago, Chris Fowler saying Ryan Williams on that crazy long touchdown play is definitely stuck in my head. But Chris does a great job with the calls. It's just memorable or not. You know, it is clearly stuck in my memory along the way. What else do we have?
Maserati Mark.
Now we're just going to Gus's best ones.
Best ones, yes.
Yeah.
Not football, so I'm sorry, Jake, but I did think that the NCAA tournament has given us some really good calls over the last couple of years. You know, you take it back to, I think it's Kevin Harlan, Dan Bonner, Stan Van Gundy in the Furman winner over Virginia in the first round. And they've even got the booth cam where you can see Harlan tell everyone to lay out. He like puts his hands across both of them and is like, quiet. Like, we just got to let this sit for a second. And then you come back in with the analysis. I think the same thing kind of happened with Ian Eagle and Bill Raftery and Grant Hill when you had the UConn winner against Duke. The timing of all that, and maybe that goes back to the Vern. With that, how about this? What will make a great and memorable call sometimes has as much to do with the timing of when you say things as the words that you are saying, and your ability to understand where in sort of like as everyone is taking it in, where to deliver those words, I think probably has as much of an impact. Like the Vern, no flags. And Vern's talked about it, is at the end of that crazy play, all you're thinking about is, especially a return play, a block in the back, a hold, something that was going to make this amazing thing that we just happened be a total air out of the balloon situation. Sometimes when you say the words in a call can be as important as the actual words that you are saying right there.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff from Jake. Okay, we got a couple of news items to hit before we get into the big topic of the day, which is a fun one. Try to make sure that we leave a good amount of time for this. We're going through all the power conferences to tell you our dark horses. But the amazing suggestion of the Cover 3 tailgate a couple years ago is that dark horses isn't enough. To try and pick somebody who's not at the top of the odds board, who could maybe be a threat in a conference title race. Okay, oh, that's cute. Everybody does that. What about the opposite? What's the opposite of a dark horse? That'd be a chalk donkey. Dark horses, chalk donkeys. We're going to be running through those through all the power conferences here in just a little bit. But a story that is not necessarily ultra impactful on, you know, our view of Texas Tech or the Big 12 or college football, but one that is definitely an interesting conclusion of sorts, or at least a major delay in the Brendan Sorsby saga, is a sternly worded letter from the NFL that just is a big no thanks to the idea of having Brendan Sorsby in the league. They detailed a large collection of issues that the NFL had with his request for a supplemental draft. Important to note, the NFL does not have to do a supplemental draft. You know, they can choose to do a supplemental draft. And as Brendan Sorsby tried to get in before the deadline to be able to give himself an opportunity to play in the NFL in 2026, the NFL says, no thanks. There are a myriad of issues, including the timing with which you have submitted for the supplemental draft, the way that this is kind of being rushed through, and the reasons why you were declared ineligible by the NCAA. You are more than welcome to come and go through the draft process in April 2027, like you might have been planning to begin with. So no football, right, in the fall for Brendan Sorsby. Danny, you know, you give us the NFL side of this. I don't know if this was something that you got a sense of what teams thought or how much they, whether this was a league thing, a team thing, an owner thing. What'd you make of Brendan Sorsby getting shut out by the NFL?
We thought, you know, I thought the NCAA would make an example out of Brendan Sorsby. I don't think they really did that. I think the NFL did.
Yeah, I agree. I
mean, this was a more scathing, so. Yeah, much more so. I mean, yeah. And there's not going to be, I mean, maybe there will be, because I know there's been some conversation about a lawsuit, which doesn't seem to be the smartest thing out there. But this was a scathing letter to Brendan Sorsby, basically saying you really didn't show any remorse. Like, that was kind of the thing that I gleaned from that letter. And they've been a league that has been pretty harsh on it. And, you know, it's not a right. It is a privilege to play in the NFL. I think they took that stance and they're saying, go get yourself healthy, come back, check back in a year. But this year, we're not having it. I know it was a very, very strong statement from the NFL.
Um, Why are we talking about Brendan Sorsby? Come on.
Still,
we've got a lot of fun things to talk about, but this, did you not find it interesting?
I mean, I think it was interesting because no one saw this coming.
Yeah.
No, I kind of saw it coming. I mean,
but didn't you think it would have been just a flat out suspension or six games or eight, whatever it was, to say we're not holding it just for you? Everyone was talking about the date. When's it going to be? Oh, his workout's going to be July 11th. Then they'll figure it out. No one had this on their radar. That's why I think it's pretty fascinating.
I thought it was going to be more that he wouldn't have gotten drafted. The surprise to me was just the NFL saying we're not going to do the draft. But that's probably because they understood nobody was going to draft him. Because, I mean, sports gambling is legal now. It wasn't for a very long time. But the fact of the matter is, the NFL is as popular as it is. It's because it was driven by sports gambling for a very long time. People gambling on football games. That's why a lot of these sports became as popular as they are. And the NFL cannot have any kind of conflict of interest or any kind of implication that this could be happening in their sport. So they don't want anything to do with Brendan Sorsby. So they have to do this to get, you know, to punish him, to make it look like, you know, like Ryan said in the chat, it's effectively a 1-year suspension. And it's to separate themselves. And it's also to set an example for anybody else. Like, but that's the thing. Like, the NFL has set this example before. They have suspended players already for betting on, and, you know, I don't know. Like, what did Jameson Williams, was he betting on NFL games or was he just betting on other sports?
No, I can't remember between Jameson Williams and Calvin Ridley, but one of them was simply like it was in the facility. His violation was not betting on NFL. Mm-hmm. His, one of those two violations were just, you were in the facility on your gambling apps.
Yeah, it's very much a third rail topic for the NFL, as it was for college football, except for one judge who just is like, oh, screw it. But, I mean, yeah, it's funny. I can't remember where Jameson Williams was when he was gambling, but I can remember what shorts he was wearing while he was closing on his house last week. I don't know if you guys saw that photo.
I missed that one.
Way to go, J-Mo. But, yeah, I mean, he'll end up in a camp next year. We'll see if he makes it. I think this is just another consequence of a lot of bad decisions on his part. If he'd have just gone to the NFL after last season, he'd be in a training camp right now. And I think this is, you know, bad advice, bad decisions, and it happens. But I think this is also a diversion by Chip, because he doesn't want us talking about the worst decision made by North Carolina's Henry Bissar, who gave up $5 million to not even get drafted in the first 50 picks of the NBA draft. That's what this, that's why we're talking about this. Chip's trying to move. Oh, Chip, I see what you're up to.
North Carolina basketball would have been better with Henry Vassar there as opposed to Henry Vassar not being there. Henry Vassar is not going to have the same financial or life reality that he would have been if he was the cornerstone of a, you know, Michael Malone's first basketball team. He's also old as shit and might be done being a college student, you know?
But $5 million, you think you could suck it up and be a college student for another year?
I'm not the biggest Estonian here, okay? Like, I mean, that is the thing that I've come back to, because there was a lot of criticism, but from the jump, there was a lot of signaling from the Hubert Davis fired part of this. There was a lot of signaling that Henry Vassar might be done being a college basketball player, that he's just, he's ready to stop even pretending to play class, you know?
Right.
Like, I would like to be an adult now. So that's that. Each of these is a unicorn. No, what's even more devastating, and I think we've, let's see, Punt's birthday is in 3 weeks. I don't think he would hear this before then. We got him a LaMelo Ball jersey for his birthday.
On eBay?
Huh?
Put it on eBay?
No. He's still going to like it, because it looks cool. I mean, it's the Hornets pinstripe LaMelo Ball jersey. It is in his size. It's going to look sick. He is going to be very fired up for it. The messaging on that, we might just wait for October. Where's LaMelo? Why does Kobe White look like LaMelo Ball?
Return the jersey and buy him one of those like little electric cars and have him crash into a tree with it. Same thing.
Well, yeah, I'd say streets of Charlotte got safer, you know, now that LaMelo's not driving around. That's one thing that you can be encouraged by. I think that the one thing I was reminded about is that the NCAA has so many different members and spans so many jurisdictions, and we've got public universities and the authority of these county courts. NFL is a private entity. I know the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned, but they have collective bargaining agreements, and they have, you know, the screws are a bit tighter. And so the ability for these players to just sort of bend and blur and flirt in and out of the rules, the Brendan Sorsby story to me is a great reminder of the shield and how tight the screws are on the shield. So I don't know. I don't even know if Sorsby's got a collusion case here. You know, like it's just, I think they looked across the board, said, anybody want to deal with this? Nope. Okay. Come on back next April. That's what it is. So that's where Brendan Sorsby, we expect we'll see him again. And maybe, just maybe, if you come and check out tomorrow, Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern time on CBS Sports Network, the Cover 3 podcast will be back on your TVs. That's right! The Cover 3 podcast will be back on CBS Sports Network on Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And one of the things we're going to be rolling through are our quarterback rankings for each of the power conferences. Since he won't be a part of the Big 12, DK, let's finish with this. Before we get done tomorrow, let's rank Brendan Sorsby against the 2027 NFL draft quarterbacks. You want to do that?
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
Okay,
so final block right there.
Yeah, we'll do one segment on each of the power conferences with our power rankings of the quarterbacks, and then we'll finish with Brendan Sorsby against the 2027 quarterback draft class. So that, come and check us out, CBS Sports Network, 1 p.m. Eastern time. One more here from the news desk. This is something that I think that we actually just have to take credit for. Claps for us. You're welcome. On our conference realignment reset, earlier this week, we did detail, you know, North Dakota State and kind of where it would fit, and that it did need one last little change. Well, the NCAA rule changes will allow for postseason eligibility for North Dakota State and Sacramento State. This was something that was on the docket to be able to get passed. It does look like the road has been paved. I don't think that we've gotten total updates from the conferences themselves, but what are we going to say? Nod, common sense, happy about this?
A lot of common sense decisions coming from the NCAA in recent weeks. I'm on vacation next week. I am terrified what's going to happen while I'm gone, because when the NCAA starts doing things that make sense, I feel like there's something coming down the pipe that is going to be real bad.
Are you rooting for North Dakota State in the Mountain West?
Yeah. I root for everybody, Chip.
It said postseason. That includes a conference championship game, right?
Yeah. It mm-hmm. should include, but I think that because they aren't, like, I think the conference still has to push it over the edge. I think that what we get from the ruling officially is bowl games and college football playoff.
Yeah, but there's no reason for the Mountain West not to include North Dakota State or for the MAC to include Sacramento State at this point.
Correct.
Like, they haven't come out and said it, but I can't imagine why the league would be like, no, we don't think it's fair. I mean, Northern Illinois is eligible, but North Dakota State ain't.
North Dakota State, if North Dakota State does not make a bowl game, it will be a disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably, now that they can put odds on them to win the league, they're probably one of the favorites in the league.
Yeah.
They'll be right up there.
In fact, let me see if they've updated that yet.
I did not see it last night.
Yeah, I was not putting Mountain West bets up yet.
But we'll be keeping an eye on it. North Dakota State, a lot of those Mountain West games we will have on CBS, CBS Sports Network, the CBS family. Of course, things that you can stream on Paramount Plus. Well, coming up on the other side, time to talk dark horses and time to talk chalk donkeys. We'll start in the Big Ten and more.
Next.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. I need to, if you watched on youtube.com/cover3, you just saw a cool Paramount Plus soccer promotion of, I think we got three really good soccer documentaries right now. Nice little companion pieces to all the World Cup action that we have been following. I need to go, RIP Grant Wall, but I saw him right there in that one. That was Grant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to go check that out. From the tailgate, Danielle says, as an Englishman, I'd like to say Tom is wrong. Maybe it's Daniel Lorne. As an Englishman, I'd like to say I think Tom is wrong. The U.S. could absolutely beat England.
No, because people will point to the Ghana-England match. Ghana parked the bus. For those who don't understand what that means they just didn't even try to score. They just played defense and forced.
It's like what Georgia Tech did against Florida State in 2015 before they beat them.
Yeah.
Drag them down into a 19-17 game and just hope you can block a kick and run it back.
Yeah, let them have the ball, but make sure every shot they get's from 20 yards out. It's much harder to score that way. The U.S. isn't going to do that. That's not how the U.S. plays. So when they get to if they meet in the knockout stage, the U.S. is going to press. They are going to attack. And that is when they are going to be hurt by a team that is better than they are and is more talented than they are, because they don't really play that way. So, no, I really don't think the U.S. is going to be. It's about matchups. And the way if the U.S. was playing just to win games 0-0 and go to a shootout, yeah, I think they could beat England in the knockout range. But I don't think they're going to play that way.
I don't know.
I'm a patriot. Yeah. I'm giving them a chance. I'm saying we can do it. We can do anything. We toppled them once. We could do it again.
Well, I'm not going with anything. But yeah. I'll go ahead. But the puckering factor would be too strong. That's what I'd be. I'd have my money on. I'd have my money on the pucker factor. Brad, he is a big fan of the show. We love when he hangs out in the tailgate. He called his shot early. No bud today, so he clearly owes Chip, Danny, and Tom a beer each for their day off coverage. Yes, for those who weren't aware, we did not. This is really the tailgate initiated. Tailgate has declared an O sheet for all this heavy lifting that's being done. What? Add it to the tally.
We need to get a board going. We can update it with every show.
Okay, let's start with the Big Ten and our dark horses and chalk donkeys. Danny, you and Tom are both zeroed in on one team as a dark horse team that we should be keeping our eyes on. Paint the picture for me of how you could see things working out with the Washington Huskies emerging from the shadows to being a big player in the Big Ten this year.
One has to do with the big jump they made in year two with Jed Fish. Two has to do with the quarterback they have returning. Three has to do with the schedule. Very manageable early. The finish is absolutely brutal. USC is a team that, while that's their one tough game early on the road, if they could somehow win that game, I could see them potentially being 9-1 or even 10-0 on those last two games, and they get Indiana at home. Now, granted, they had Ohio State at home last year, right? That was last year, right? Mm-hmm. When they came up short, but that's not an easy one. And you get a little rivalry with Oregon, where you've had a lot of success recently against Oregon. I think Washington's a team that people could be sleeping on a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not approaching this from a dark horse to win the league kind of thing. I don't think Washington can win the Big Ten. But I do think
they get in the playoffs. I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do think this is a team that could be very much in the playoff conversation come the end of the year. And you mentioned, like, they have a difficult schedule, particularly down the home stretch. But I also think that's what kind of makes them somewhat of a live dog here. Because if they do go on the road and beat USC, which I don't, they're not going to be favored to, but like, given how USC has performed in recent years, it wouldn't be that much of a shock for the Trojans to lose to the Huskies. So they might be looking at like an 8-0 kind of start before that final stretch starts. And, you know, you get Indiana and Oregon at the end of the year. They might be battered and beat up too at that point. You might be able to pull off an upset. But if you go and you're like 8-0 and then you take down Penn State, you're 9-0 and you're 10-0 going into those final two games, even if you lose them, you're very much going to be in the playoff conversation. Now, the recency bias could hurt them in the rankings because two losses in last week compared to two losses in September are far easier to remember. But yeah, I think this is a team that when we talk about the Big Ten, we've talked about USC, we talk about the Big Four, we talk about all those guys, but I think Washington's just being a little bit slept on as a team with the veteran quarterback coming back, and obviously with what happened with DeMond over the offseason with the transfer portal stuff, maybe that derails him, but from what I've heard, that's kind of all water under the bridge at this point.
And it wasn't that long and drawn out, it was pretty quick. Like, it's kind of like they ripped off the Band-Aid, got it fixed back on, and then there's time to kind of build that continuity and trust back up.
I think the defense, you know, we got Ryan Walters, defensive coordinator, some good pieces back on defense. The world shouldn't hang on like the running back room, but everybody in the running back room is hurt right now. You know, like they got Jaden Lamar in from Oregon. He hasn't been healthy. Jordan Washington hasn't really been healthy. A couple of items where I'm not quite ready to throw everything behind the Huskies just yet. But what I love about the way that you described that is sometimes with a dark horse, especially the way that we talk about them being a factor in the playoff race or a factor in the Big Ten title race, you do need to get to November as a player.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Like, just because a team might, you know, end up going 10-2, but the story of the season will not have them as a dark horse if those two losses are both in September, right?
And they're like blowouts to good teams, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when Washington goes into those games against Indiana and Oregon at the end of the year, if they've got a 9 beside their name, you're a factor. Mm-hmm. Like, you have emerged from the darkness to be able to be there. So keeping my eyes on some injury updates with the Huskies. Obviously, they need to replace a lot of talent, not just at the running back room, but at wide receiver as well with the loss of Denzel Boston to the NFL. Could I talk you into one of the teams on that schedule? Now, it's a team that does have to go to Seattle, but it's a team that brings back a quarterback, even if he did find himself in a little bit of hot water over the offseason, but does bring back a lot of pieces, and that is the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Now, Minnesota is entering year 10 of the PJ Fleck experience. Whoa. Yeah. Been there for a minute. And things have gotten, you know, pretty steady. I mean, we're talking, you know, 66 wins over the last 9 seasons. Like, there is an established, you know, baseline where I think they are not going to be, you know, that poor. I do think defensively they need to make sure that they've got their pass rush shored up, a few other places where I'm, you know, keeping an eye on things. But in general, I really think that this is going to be a Drake Lindsey sets your standard. And if they get some good skill position help along the way, then they get to take that next step. Now, what is the ceiling for Minnesota? Do I think Minnesota is going to win the Big Ten? I do not. Do I think that Minnesota has a great opportunity to have a high win total, seeing as there is no Ohio State and no Oregon? Now, there is an Indiana, there is a Penn State, there is Michigan and Washington, but I do think that where Michigan and Washington are, maybe more on them later, this could be a team that could end up making a little bit of noise from a little bit lower on the board, as they say, when it comes to your win total or your conference title odds.
I mean, there's certainly a floor. Like, you just kind of know what you're going to get with this team. And there is a lot of, maybe not returning starts, but there's a lot of returning experience. Like, this isn't a team that's had a huge overhaul in the portal. A lot of guys who've been around. one of the best pass rushers in the country that doesn't really get a ton of credit, and Anthony Smith. Like, mm-hmm. he's not very, like, he doesn't get a lot of notoriety nationally, but he's, ask any Big Ten offensive coordinator that's had to deal with him in the last year. They'll tell you all about him. But yeah, I think that there is a chance if things go well, if Drake Lindsey takes a leap. And I like Lindsey. I thought last year as a freshman, PJ Fleck, as his teams tend to do, kind of had him reined in a little bit because they didn't want him doing too much. And that's probably not going to change drastically. But I just think that he has the kind of talent to stretch the field a little more vertically than Minnesota typically does. And maybe we see them kind of take some of the restrictor plates off of him going into his second year as a starter. And the offense can get a little more dynamic doing so. And I don't think the defense is going to be incredible, but I do think that if you have a good pass rush, which I think they do, that's a pretty good start.
Danny, can you buy some of this this Minnesota stock? Okay,
top 15 in the country in returning production. Now, some of that, you know, it's not top tier production, but it is a team game. That continuity helps. The backfield's back. Some of the offensive line is back. So, yeah, I think, and it's like, I do think the floor is kind of pretty safe. It's just, can you get a little bit more out of the offense, and, you know, maybe knock off a surprise team or two? I think you could talk me into that.
I think this is also.
Do you think the ceiling is the playoff? I think the ceiling's like 8-4.
I think the Big Ten is the toughest dark horse chalk donkey for me to wrap my head around because I feel so confident in the tiers, which means I'm wrong. But, like, you know, seeing who's going to be breaking through ceilings or falling off cliffs, I feel so strongly about those top three teams and the class, the weight class that they are in, and the rest of the conference not being there, that it's, this one's a little bit tougher for me where I'm picking Minnesota, but I understand that college football playoff is not, you're not going to find me imagining that as a part.
No. What would concern me and what kind of causes me to not be too overly hyped about their possibility of taking a major step forward is if you go back to last year's results, outside of Northwestern State, there weren't really any blowout wins. They were all pretty close games, which is typical because of how Minnesota's style of play is. It's hard to blow teams out. But the losses, typically not very close. Like, they lost by 3 to Northwestern, but they lost by 30 to Oregon. They lost by 38 to Iowa. They lost by 39 to Ohio State. They lost by 13 to Cal. So it does kind of, when there's that big of a gap between you and clearly who the better teams on your schedule were, I don't know how much of that you can make up for in one off season.
The other team that I considered here, where I think I set a higher floor and potentially a higher ceiling, would be the Iowa Hawkeyes. I don't know if anybody's got a prediction on the Jeremy Heklinski, Hank Brown battle, but I'll just say maybe Heklinski, just as kind of the, you keep the mobility from the way that Tim Lester ran things with Gronowski last season. The key for me twofold, and this is going to shock you, the lines of scrimmage. Offensively, you've got a pair of really solid offensive linemen and then a lot of other depth pieces that are back, but really not a lot of portal additions to my eye. It's going to be program, like, guys who have been in the program that need to step up. Okay, it's your time to go. But then defensively, if Phil Parker got this right, Iowa could be a dark horse because it's like guys from Holy Cross and Elon and Northern Illinois, you know, the players who they are bringing in, for the most part, it's, you know, if you got the evaluation right, then you found diamonds in the rough, and you've got a defensive line that's ready to replace a ton of players that left from last year's Iowa defense. That is my Iowa dark horse, you know, if then. If the portal additions on the defensive line hit, Iowa can be a dark horse. That'd be sort of my burning question there. Even as they have an unsettled quarterback scenario, I think that that's probably more important for Iowa's overall, you know, success here. That was another team I looked at.
Not to derail the show, but this is show related. Huge breaking news. I don't know if you saw, Chip, you want to go to Nashville in January?
Ooh, we got a national championship game in
January 30th in Nashville at the Bridgestone Arena. The North Carolina Tar Heels, and not Henry Vassar, are taking on the University of Illinois Fighting Illini.
Whoa!
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah.
So wait, hold on. When's the
game? Are we selling it? It's going to be a big money maker.
January 30th. Yeah, so the title game will have been played.
2027 national title game, CFB. What's that day? Okay, so the title game is on the 25th. Do we fly straight to Nashville or do we go home and then meet in Nashville?
Or do we just stay in Vegas, blow it out, and watch the game from Vegas? Now we're talking. That's what we need to do.
Cover 3 meetup in like a postseason celebrate the year in Nashville.
Yeah. You know what? We can save money. We'll stay at Barton's house.
Oh my gosh.
Martin won't mind.
Barton would come. Okay. All right. This is how the sausage gets made. Okay, so the season will be done. We could do a live show recapping the year. We could do like a superlatives thing where we like give out awards for the entire season. An end of the year banquet. An end of season banquet in Nashville featuring Barton Simmons ahead of the UNC Illinois basketball game.
Done. We're in.
Stryker, Debo, Claire,
make it happen.
Taft, regulators mount up. Let's go. Us and the bachelorette parties. Throw me on a double-decker bus. All right. That's such incredible news. Thank you. It's definitely show-related and potentially might have just gotten a live event going. Let's go Chalk Donkey. I like Tom. Ooh, Tom.
I was going to go with Indiana, but I'm not. Indiana fans hate me enough as it is. I'm going to go.
I just don't want to get clipped. I'll be honest about that.
Right.
I can't say it with my chest. If this was like 5 years ago, I could do it to be trolly and feel like it'd be okay. But
My only reasoning for calling Indiana a chalk donkey in this specific case would be that if you look on one website, they have better odds than Oregon. And I don't know if I would say that the team with Oregon that has their quarterback coming back, who might be the first quarterback taken in the draft next year, should be an underdog to Indiana. But again, my real pick, and this might be stretching a little bit because they're not exactly a favorite, but I'm going with Penn State. I just, like, Washington's my dark horse. I like Washington's odds of winning the Big Ten more than I like Penn State's. And I don't think either can. But I feel like Penn State is at 20-1, but if it was Nebraska, same exact team, just a different helmet and uniform, it'd probably be closer to 40-1. I don't see it. I know Rocco Becht is a good quarterback, and he's an experienced quarterback, and I know that Matt Campbell brought a lot of Iowa State guys with him, and I know there's still some talent that was left over from the previous staff, too. Like, James Franklin didn't take everybody. But like that team last year, the actual Penn State team wasn't that great. And now I don't know that they're better as far as talent is concerned. So I see them and I see that schedule, which again, that's the other factor. If that schedule was any regular Big Ten schedule, they would not have those odds. This is all based on the schedule. But I don't know. Like, you look at that right now and you say, oh, that's an easy schedule. I think some teams are looking at Penn State on their schedule and saying, that's an easier game this year. So I don't know how much better Penn State is than those teams. We'll find out. I love Matt Campbell. I mean, I'm on the record. I love Campbell. I love the hire. I love the long-term projection of what they have going on there. I just don't think 2026 is going to be very fun.
Mm.
My, you know, you were talking about the Minnesota getting blown out against good teams. That Penn State could be potentially one of those teams where against the very best teams on their schedule, clearly outclassed, but then able to stuff the ballot box with a lot of wins just because of the way the schedule checks out. DK, who's your chalk donkey?
So similar to Tom, it's not like, and this is like you're finding somebody to talk about, right? It's not saying this is absolutely going to happen because I like the new hire. But I also don't know if it works like the way that, because Michigan fell into Kyle Whittingham, right? That was not supposed to be an option. They fell into him. Everybody loves the hire, myself included. He's had an incredible run at Utah. But it is a different part of the country. It is a different culture. He's trying to establish his. But a large part of this, I think there's a pretty, like, I don't think they fall apart because I think the defense, I think they will be tougher. But a lot of this goes to Bryce Underwood. Like, is he going to, like, everyone, I think people think, Jason Beck's going to work him in his system. He's going to figure it out. But there's also the option on the table that what if he's the next DJ Lagway? You know, somebody that we saw flashes. Oh, he's going to take the next step, and then you don't. That could be a scenario where I would say Michigan falls well short of expectations in Kyle Whittingham's first year.
I was not ready to pick off any of the top three and identify them as chalk donkeys. But on CBS Sports Network later today, I will be predicting the Michigan Wolverines to go 7-5. So I guess I should be jumping in on your side of this too.
Seven and five.
Yeah.
Man, what are the five losses?
Oklahoma, Iowa, Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State.
Wow. You've got them losing at home twice to Oklahoma.
I know, Iowa.
And then losing at home to Indiana.
So the argument is I actually think that's awful. I think if they could have played Oklahoma in late October, it'd be better than this. I just think that everything is being hastily arranged. I think the hire was hasty. I think the install was hasty. We're basing our defensive outlook on John Henry Daly coming back from an Achilles injury and being ready to go. I mean, there's just a lot that needs to all be running at top speed while Oklahoma brings back a lot of the key pieces that allowed them to be a college football playoff team, and they're coming in hitting the ground running. I mean, Western Michigan is a very, very good MAC team, but what is, like, are you going to learn enough from that game? Are you going to get enough work done in fall camp? I think Michigan will be a better team under Kyle Whittingham when Kyle Whittingham has more time with his team. And he was with the same team forever, and everything has changed now. Yeah, Jason Beck's still the same, but we're also, you know, changing over the defense and changing over the defensive coordinators. We're hoping Rod Moore, you know, might be. There's a lot of ifs, and among those includes Bryce Underwood. Now, as I was going through and checking this, crossing my T's, dotting my I's, making sure before I go out and throw a 7-5 prediction on the Michigan Wolverines, all right, let's make sure we're really locked into at least the perspective here. The weakness would be that the spring game, in addition to weather, was a huge false flag because of the nature of Jason Beck's offense. Because we've heard comments from Michigan players and people close to the program that one of the things that is going to allow Michigan's offense to take these huge steps forward in year two of Bryce Underwood as a starter is the tempo. And that playing up tempo allows some of the, like Marsh and some of those other wide receivers, to be able to just go make one-on-one plays. And that Bryce Underwood in the spring game, of course, is doing everything super vanilla and not up tempo and not being able to really stress opposing defenses in the same way that he's going to in the fall. But again, those seem like ifs. So yeah, I think that there is a scenario where Michigan in year one of Kyle Whittingham has a little bit of a bumpy transition year. I think it's a tough schedule. It's a really, really tough schedule. And it just, if they're not ready to go right at the start of the season, take a loss or two in September and still have to play the three toughest teams in the Big Ten, big picture, things could be great. I'm just not ready to look at this team as a team that's ready to threaten the top of the conference.
Clip it.
Sure. I mean, we'll see.
Blast it out at all socials. Tag Michigan, tag Chip. Make sure everybody knows who said it. Put it out there.
Coming up on the other side, we turn our attention to the Southeastern Conference. Where do the chalk donkeys wear burnt orange, purple, both?
Next.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, continuing to roll through Dark Horses and Chalk Donkeys. Let's turn our attention to the SEC. We'll start with the positive stuff first. I'll let you go, Tom. Who do you have your eyes on for the Dark Horses?
My dark horse in the SEC is the team that you have beating Michigan in Ann Arbor in September. I'm going to go with Oklahoma. I was not a huge Oklahoma backer last year. I was never super high on John Mateer. I'm still not like overly high on him, but I look at, you know, again, this is looking at the odds. 13-1 on DraftKings behind Ole Miss. Ole Miss lost a lot of talent. I know that you got Trinidad back, but they also lost their head coach. And like, let's give Lane Kiffin some credit that he deserves. Like, Ole Miss was better because of Lane Kiffin. I don't know if they're going to be as good without him for a full season. And I look at LSU, and obviously they've got Lane Kiffin now. They got some talent. So I understand that. But this was a team that, you know, still has a lot of holes that they needed to fill. And there's Oklahoma, the team that, you know, you could say benefited a bit from the schedule last year, but this is a team that got to the college football playoff. It has a returning quarterback. It's going to have a very good defense again. We know that for a fact. So I look at this squad as somebody who, when we talk about the teams most likely to be the playoff teams in the SEC this year, I feel like the Sooners don't get mentioned early enough. And I think this is a team that should very much be in the playoff conversation. Again, it wouldn't shock me, honestly. Like, there's the Michigan game where I said, you know, that they could win that one. Wouldn't be too big of a surprise. But then there, a few weeks later, they're playing Texas. And I know that's at the neutral site. And I know everybody loves Texas going into this year. But what if Oklahoma beats Texas again? Like, is that really that big of a stretch? So for me, the Sooners are a team that I think are very much in the running to get to Atlanta, very much in the running to compete for an SEC title, and very much in the running for a playoff berth again. So they're my dark horse.
Damn. I had them too for a lot of the same reasons. The defense, since Brent Venables has taken back over, looks really good. I know they lost a couple pieces, but they have a lot of pieces returning as well. They went out and got some help in the backfield. They went out and Parker Livingstone from Texas coming over to play for the rival. I do think some of this does depend. Like Mateer, you know, I was pretty critical of him last year. Thought, you know, when all the hype was kind of putting him at the top of the highs, and I'm like, man, when you watch the film, it's a little bit too much off the cuff, a little bit too much of a swashbuckler, and it caught up to him. Then it was the thumb injury. Like, was that impacting his play? I still think that's who he is. I don't know if you're ever going to get like the cleanest game, but the guy's a winner, man. He's tough. He can put it, he's not afraid to put it down, get those tough yards. I think the team loves him. I think he could be sort of that guy they rally around. So I had them for my dark horse as well.
You get Ole Miss and Texas A&M in Norman, you know.
And they have, yeah, and those are two of the teams with better odds to win the SEC than Oklahoma. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I could see a few lumps early and a really, really strong finish for Oklahoma. I could see a second straight college football playoff appearance for Oklahoma. And like you said, I think I am ready to take stock for them more than I am ready to do it for Ole Miss. And again, they are pretty fully formed coming off a college football playoff season, right? We are replacing important pieces, but we kind of know they're not going through some huge identity crisis. I mean, shoot, going into last season, Brent Venables had an identity crisis. We had his ass on the hot seat going into last season. And he made some coordinator changes, got some players from the portal, got to the college football playoff. So like that shout on Oklahoma. I'm going to go with the Tennessee Vols. Here's, again, if I'm going to be in one part of this show talking about John Henry Daly and my concerns coming back from an Achilles injury, then you're going to be like, well, what about Chaz Coleman? You really think Chaz Coleman's going to play out there? You think that that's going to be this? It is undoubtedly a concern. Not only my expectations that maybe Tennessee will be without the superstar edge rusher transfer, but that, you know, it is going to be something that might be the entirety of the season. I do think the Jim Knowles addition is really, really big and really, really important. They do have other options behind Coleman in terms of being able to step up at edge rusher. And they've got some players to replace on the back end and the secondary. But the big piece of this, and the thing that makes it a wild card, dark horse type play, I think Faison Brandon's going to have a great season. I think he's going to beat out George McIntyre for the starting job. And I think he's going to have a very, very successful, like, threaten for freshman All-America team. I'm not saying he's going to go out and be the best quarterback in the SEC, but I think that he could be the best freshman quarterback in the country this season. He's got, when you're a five-star, you know, very top three, top two type player in the class, there's a lot of athleticism skills. But what he's going to be able to provide in terms of being able to really stress opponents with that RPO game in the up-tempo offense, it is not an absolutely crazy strong arm, but it is a strong, it is not Hendon Hooker, right? But it is a strong arm. And you've got, whether it's Staley or Matthews, you got a couple good running backs. You've got Deshaun Bishop back after a 1,000-yard season running the football at running back. You bring back, you lose Lance Hurd, but you still have David Sanders and five players on the offensive line with starting experience. I mean, you want to talk about setting the table for a freshman quarterback in a system with Josh Heupel that we know can be a little bit easier to digest and to be able to step right in and get moving. I think Faison Brandon's going to have a big season, and I think that Tennessee will be contending for a college football playoff spot. Whether they end up being that, you know, four, I think SEC is probably going to end up getting five teams in the college football playoff just based on the gaps in the conferences. Tennessee could be a top five team in the SEC. And I think a lot of it has to do with the offense and the way it's set up for Faison Brandon to have a successful season.
Dig it.
Let's go. Go Vols, orange and white. All right, let's go to, hey, we'll save, it's a, we're giving the Lindsey Buckingham treatment to the ACC and the Big 12 once again. Oh, sorry, we ran out of time for you cute little boys. We'll come back to you next time. But yeah, Monday's mailbag episode will also include the dark horses and the chalk donkeys. But I don't want to blitz through, you know, everything we've got here. We're having good conversations. Okay, let's flip it. Chalk donkey, Danny Cannell, who you got?
I think it's the team that's gotten the most hype this offseason. Before the Texas Tech saga unfolded, we thought it was going to be the offseason of Lane Kiffin. I'll go LSU. And basically, this is because of their own fan base's expectation of where they think they should be in year one. It seems to be national championship or bust. So I'm going to lean towards the or bust side of that equation. I don't think it's going to be a total disaster, but I don't see them being a national championship team. I think they're borderline if they even get in the playoffs, and I would say they don't. Schedule is tough. The first three games of this first four games, I mean, the first month of the season is going to be a really, really tough test for LSU to come together. Sam Levitt, I know they got some good news about the health, but that's already a question mark. He did miss a lot of the spring, missed some of that time to get acclimated. Got to get all these pieces together. And I know Lane did it at Ole Miss several times, but I think this season, I think schedule's too tough, even with the superstar roster they've amassed.
Okay, let me find I don't know if I've got an appropriate way to say this. I could see LSU, here we go. Make it about war. Why don't make it about that? I could see LSU using all of its bullets early. I could see them having a little bit of a tough time keeping it going. I could absolutely see them starting the season hair on fire for the Lane era. Everything's great. Sunny day sailor. That run. Alabama, Texas, Tennessee. We're all at the end of the season for a roster that has like 70 new players, you know, between your true freshman and your transfer portal. I could see things falling apart late. Like, I could see LSU fans coming at you early when they start 3-1 or 4-0, and you could just sit back and say, come talk to me at the end of the year, because I could see some losses starting to pile up at the end of that schedule for a team that might have trouble keeping it going all throughout the season. Tom, who's your talk donkey?
Well, my dark horse was an SEC playoff team last year that I don't think is giving enough of a chance to get back to the playoff this year. And my chalk donkey is an SEC playoff team from last year who I think people are just way too happy to assume is going to be back in the playoff conversation this year. Texas A&M. I know that, like, using returning production numbers, they have a lot coming back. I think that is somewhat skewed by the fact that the people they're missing were pretty important to what they did. And if you go and you look under the hood last year a little bit, like, yeah, this team got to the playoff. They had that 1-point win over Notre Dame in September, which was a huge win for them. It ended up, you know, being a huge win for their resume. But if that's a game, to me, if you played it a whole lot of times, how many times do you think Texas A&M wins it? I think that was one of an outlier result that they got. They had a 6-point win over Auburn, who was bad. They had a 3-point win over Arkansas, who was bad. They had a 1-point win over South Carolina, who was bad. And if you looked at their schedule after that Notre Dame game, they didn't play anybody good until the final week of the season when they played Texas and they lost. Then they got to the playoff and they played Miami and they lost. And in those two losses, they scored only 20 points. And Marcel Reed took a big leap last year. Then he kind of faltered at the end. Now Colin Klein is gone. Do we think Marcel Reed's still going to be on that same level? Like, I think defensively, they're still going to be good. Like, it's, I mean, you know, you look at that coaching staff, you got Mike Elko, the defense will be fine. I just don't know if offensively they're going to be as good, if they will have the capability to win a lot of those coin flip games that, frankly, they shouldn't have been in last year, and they were in, and they ended up winning. And you look at the schedule this year, you know, it's not a death march, but LSU on the road is not going to be easy. Missouri on the road won't be easy. Alabama on the road, Oklahoma on the road, Texas, Tennessee, Chip, you were just talking them up. Mm-hmm. This is a team that I could see losing 3 or 4 games pretty easily and not really being in the playoff conversation at the end of the year. And when I look at the odds that they're getting, and they're, you know, to win the SEC, they've got, what, better odds than Alabama, or the same odds as Alabama, better than LSU, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Tennessee. I'm sorry. I just don't see them being the third best team in the SEC. And if you look at the odds, it says they are.
Yep. The 4 of those last 5 games are losable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if like it, I'm sorry, Garrett, and all of our Texas A&M listeners, but not to give you Kevin Sumlin, Jimbo Fisher flashbacks, but all those seasons that started, what, 6-1 and then finished 2-4, you know, over the, I guess, not 2-4, but, you know, 1-4, you know, across the final games, or 2-3, I guess, would be the, what would get you to 12. So, It's going to be really tough. They'll need to be on top of it there at the end. Well, you mentioned following one result. It's like being fooled by randomness, right, Tom?
Yes.
Like being fooled by randomness, which was one of your Tom Fornelli book club recommendations. Tom, did you know that we even have art now for your book club? Hey! Tailgate, tell us if you would buy a t-shirt with Tom Fornelli's book club on it. If we could get the Tom Fornelli book club merch, we could definitely have it going your way. But before we get to any conversations about merch, let's talk about the words on the paper. What is your book club recommendation for today?
You know, earlier in the show, we ran that ad for the USMNT documentaries that you can stream on Paramount Plus. But if simply watching documentaries isn't enough for you, you can read What Happened to the USMNT, The Ugly Truth About the Beautiful Game, by Stephen Mandis. It's a history, basically, of, like, it's not a history, but it provides context and history of the USMNT, the struggles that they've had, some of the reasons it goes over, like, some of the reasons that are always given for why the US stinks at soccer, and it actually goes over them and tries to figure out how much truth there is to them and how much there isn't. It's a very interesting read if you are getting into the United States soccer right now because of the World Cup and you want to learn more. It's a good read. It'll give you some context that you're probably missing. And also, it's not like a super hard read. It's one of those things where, you know, there's pictures, there's tables, there's all sorts of stuff.
So, ooh,
you
can get through
it. Yeah, exactly. So you can get through it quicker than you need. And that's the book. But there's something else going on because, like, you know, I'm a card collector as much as I am a book reader. And I got a card earlier this week, a huge addition to my collection, something I've been chasing for a long time, something I certainly could never get on my own without money.
Oh!
It's an autographed
Danny Cannell
rookie card.
Look at
autographed.
That.
Autographed. God knows I can never get that in person. but yeah, so it's cost me a whole lot of money, but it's worth it. I'm going to retire off of it. And Danny, I will say, I don't know if you can really see it on the camera, like the signature is kind of fading a little bit.
Yeah.
So if I can get you, I'm going to bring this to Chicago downtown for the Big Ten Media Days next month. If I can just get you to go over it and give it a brand new signature on there.
I'll just outline it right there.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to get you one of these. I want to get you guys one of these because, I mean, nothing Whoa! Screams like franchise quarterback kicking it on the Harley. Let's go. That's my favorite card right there. We got to get you an autograph one of that. What's up, ladies? I'm going to put that right there. In the front. The tag. Yes.
Oh, man. Look at Tom. Hold that up one more time. This is a great shout from the tailgate. I mean, look at those thigh awesome. Pads. Mm-hmm. you listen. You are good. Any hits? Yeah. Ooh,
ladies.
Protected. Good to, oh, that's great. Good to go. What a great card. So how many of the Harley cards do you have? Just one?
Oh, no, I got a ton. I got a ton of every card. They're not. I wish I could retire off them. What'd you pay for that? 79 cents on eBay?
I paid upwards of $2 for that card.
You probably paid more for shipping. Yes. Stamps are expensive these days.
Hey, worth it. Absolutely worth it. All right. We are going to be back on Monday. We'll give you our dark horses and chalk donkeys from the ACC and the Big 12 and take some of your mailbag questions. So come and hang out, watch live. We love taking questions from the tailgate. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you.